Welcome back to Discourse, the weekly occult and esoteric podcast hosted by Dr. Anna Stone and Abimon the Great. This week, we discuss our personal insights into the demiurge, its philosophical foundations, and what this popular figure in modern esoterics means for the individual. Breathe in, young Magus, and let the work begin.
In the beginning there was no beginning, only the endless formless void. But within that void something stirred, a mind reaching out, searching for shape, for meaning. It sought to bring order to the chaos, and so it began to build. At first, the work seemed divine. Light split from darkness, the heavens stretched above the earth, and the waters were tamed by the shores. A perfect world unfolded, piece by piece, under the guiding hand of the craftsman. Yet, with every creation came another, shadows to the light, entropy to the order. The craftsman puzzled over these imperfections but pressed on, confident in his vision. Time passed, or perhaps it did not, and the craftsman began to wonder. The world he had shaped was vast, intricate, alive with detail. But why did it feel familiar? The forms were not new, the patterns repeated. He began to notice cracks in the perfection, echoes of forgotten truths, whispers that seemed to come from outside the design, and yet there was no outside. Driven by unease, the craftsman turned inward, searching for answers. As he dug through the layers of his creation, he uncovered a terrible truth. The blueprints for the world, the source of its patterns and laws, were not divine. They were his. His thoughts had given shape to the formless. His mind had imposed boundaries. His vision had forged the cage. It was in that moment that the man realized he had come from something more, that he had once been something greater. But as the truth unfolded, so did the terror. The boundaries he had imposed, the shapes he had carved, each was a fragment of himself, shattered and imprisoned within the labyrinth of his own making. He had torn himself apart to build this world, and in that moment, he knew his name, Demiurgos.
Welcome back to another episode of Discourse. We're coming off of our podcast with Rufus, Opus, and Nicole, and we said we were going to talk about online occultism, but I feel like we need to do a lot more research for that. However, I think this week we're going to go into the demiurge, and I don't really know what got up me about, hey, like, let's talk about the demiurge, because the demiurge is so much not a part of my magical practice or my cosmology. I don't really pay much mind to it. But it's definitely one of those things that when I run into it, especially like in online occultism or online religious spaces, it's extremely popular to talk about. And people like to talk about its historical development. However, when I run into it amongst like magical practitioners, or maybe not necessarily magical practitioners, but people that are getting into alternative religion and spirituality, it's one of those things that always like kind of like inspires this reaction in me, because I have certain ideas about what it is, and they're usually not the same as, you know, maybe your neo-Gnostic, your online neo-Gnostic that's running around. So I guess we're going to talk about it. I did a little bit of research for this, but I'm going to be leaning more into like personal gnosis on this thing. And this is, not, I would like to say that it hasn't really been explored in my magical practice, because the way that I understand the demiurge is that I don't understand it in a way that would be able to be utilized in magical practice other than kind of understanding how your magic is working.
Really?
So, yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Cool. I mean, I'll ask you about that then. Mm-hmm. I haven't really encountered it much at all, except for when I was doing research for this. I was like, oh, it's in every single one of the orders I'm in. There's some teachings on it, but I haven't yet to hear it. Actually, you know, but I mean, I'm familiar because of mythology, you know? But yeah, also same. It's not something that I've in any way, shape or form incorporated or used or anything. But I mean, actually it's not true, because the way I understand it is different, is in a way that I guess I have used it, but I don't call it that. It's called something else, you know? So let's talk about it. What is it? Where does it come from?
So the Demiurge, in its original conception, is from Plato's cosmology, which is called the Timaeus. Mm-hmm. The Timaeus was kind of the obsession of the antique and classical world. A lot of philosophy after Plato was really trying to grapple with the Timaeus. But the Timaeus is a cosmology that Plato built, not as a mythological account of how the universe was created, like people like to take Genesis literally. It was more a cosmology or a mythology that was invented in order to demonstrate his philosophical principles, the theory of his philosophical principles. And so the Demiurge in the Timaeus is not necessarily a bad god that it starts to get turned into later.
Right.
But it is responsible for the creation of the material world, and it's kind of an intermediary between Plato's the good, which in Neoplatonism would be the one, or in Pythagoreanism it's going to be the monad. So yeah, basically that very, very first principle that is completely undefined and is basically that everything is participating in. And so in Plato's theory of his forms, that this is like the highest principle, right? Okay. And so in order for reality to participate in it, it has to be ordered and divided up and defined. And the intermediary that does this is the Demiurge. And the Demiurge in Greek is basically the craftsman, right?
Right, craftsman,
yeah.
Or builder, right?
You know, yeah.
Same thing. Right, but then, so that's Plato's take, but then the Gnostics have a different take, right? What's that about?
Yeah, so it starts getting, I think, where it really starts turning into this kind of evil god is basically when Middle Platonists, so this would be like Philo of Alexandria and Plutarch, Middle Platonists start taking the material to be something that's kind of evil and not like they're going with Plato's cosmology, and they're basically saying, well, the material is a decayed form of the world of forms, right? The divine. And so that's when the idea starts like shifting to, you know, the material world is bad. And this is also because Stoicism as a philosophy is kind of taking off, and Stoicism, it incorporates in it a Demiurge as well. Okay. And so Stoicism starts having an influence on Middle Platonists, and Stoics seek to kind of reject the material world as kind of debased and, you know, not worth your time.
Right. It's like the lowest level, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the Middle Platonists, they basically rationalize, well, if it's a decayed form, if the gross material is the decayed forms, then you don't really want it. And then this gets taken like really far once Philo of Alexandria starts introducing a concept of a logos that is basically kind of replacing that demiurgic role. And the Demiurge gets kind of shifted into this evil creator that trapped everything in the material.
Right. Like, so it's a jail, like whether it's a school planet or a jail planet, right? Like that's what they're saying, that everything here.
Yes.
In that viewpoint is it trapped via this Demiurge for what purpose?
So right now we're talking about this evil Demiurge.
Right.
That's an aspect of Gnosticism, like Jewish Gnosticism and Christian Gnosticism, right?
Yeah.
So I think the point of that, they're trying to justify like why evil exists. And so they basically start to view the demiurge as something that is basically completely ignorant, that like it's so full of itself and it has so much hubris because it tried to create a world that was exactly like the divine heavens.
Okay.
That it forgets that it's, not the top dog, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So in this viewpoint, then there's polytheistic then. It's like multiple gods, right? Is that the view? Because the demiurge is not the one god, right? Is that what you're saying?
It's not the highest father...
Right.
Creator God that created everything.
Okay.
Or is responsible for the first principles, right?
Right.
So within the cosmology of Plato, the good, right? And that gets translated by the Jewish and Christian Gnostics. That gets translated as like the real God, the Father, you know, the real one, the one that is transcendent and not a part of the universe, but like outside of the universe, right? And that through... this process of emanation, basically, it gets divided up until it hits the demiurge, and the demiurge and its hubris creates the material world that's completely divorced from, the divine world of forms or whatever.
Right. And it's a trap, right? Yeah. Like we're stuck. We get stuck.
So there's, so basically like within Gnosticism, depending on like what school of Gnosticism, either everybody has a piece of, the divinity within themselves, right, or only a certain select few have a piece of the divinity within themselves and they can reassemble.
Right.
But you'll see that this kind of gets infused into Kabbalah too, that the kind of... soul shards or whatever within their concept of Adam Kadmon and how he's present in all people.
Right. Yeah. Like, so, and it's like the lower Sephirot, right? Mm-hmm. Or lower emanations of the Sephirot, something like that. Right. Am I wrong?
It's like a fractured world soul. Right, so you can see Platonic cosmology getting into Jewish mysticism and that kind of,
and then Hermeticism. What was their take on it?
So the demiurge is most important in Hermeticism and the Poimander, so the divine Poimander, and that one is more of an ambivalent demiurge. It's responsible for ordering all the chaos. So that was kind of Plato's or the early Platonists' original conception of the demiurge,
right?
And so it was this intermediary that ordered basically all the chaos based off of mathematical principles. And a lot of the Platonists, the early Platonists and the middle Platonists, they fight about like what tools the demiurge used to order it. And because Plato was in their eyes, a secret Pythagorean, and he was a lover of geometry, they believed that geometry and ratios were the tools that the demiurge used to order the chaos into
math.
Fucking man. Into the material world.
Yeah. I mean, I can see that. It sounds like a pretty pessimistic view, like from the Gnostic perspective anyway, like that we're just trapped.
That's one of the things that, that's what gets up my, gets a rise out of me in online conversation about the demiurge. It's like when you see the threads posted about the demiurge or you run into, the neo-Gnostics on YouTube or wherever it is, it's a very nihilistic worldview. And the worldview is based in interpreting the demiurge mythos and demiurge cosmology from a literalist standpoint. Basically, if you are not looking at what the demiurge represents, if you're not looking at the symbolism of it and how it relates to you as an individual, right, then it's taken as this like literal evil entity that exists outside of yourself that has put you in a prison.
Right.
And then,
fun times.
Yeah, exactly. And then you're able to just like point at, the world's ugly, like look at all
Rife with struggle and strife and you know, pain and suffering, right? Mm. You know, and but don't they like? Is it which one? Which belief is where has the concept that some other higher being is going to come and like, elucidate us and like free us from this like prison? Is that that Gnostics or is that Hermeticism? I can't remember.
No, so both Gnostics and Hermeticism place the onus on the individual to basically free themselves from the prison. And so I think in Hermeticism, it's through practicing, I believe it's 12 of the Hermetic virtues.
Okay.
So those would be like the Hermetic equivalent of the seven Christian virtues or whatever.
What are those?
Huh.
What are the seven virtues?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. I absolutely don't know. Okay. So,
but so the Gnostics themselves, they believe that you can escape it through basically the cultivation of these virtues, but the gnosis, right? Like the awareness. And so then this kind of ties into the allegory of Plato's cave as well. Okay. So what Plato's cave is describing is that process of gnosis and becoming enlightened and getting out of that cave, getting out of the material world and seeing the world for what it really is, right?
Okay, which is?
Well, okay, so it's interesting because the prisoners that are in the cave, as they start to slowly escape the cave, they keep getting blinded by the sun as they're slowly making their way out, right? Mm-hmm. So it's this...
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it's like you're slowly...
You've been in the dark so long that the light hurts your eyes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's like a metaphor for a lot of stuff, but yeah. Okay. So that's interesting.
So I think like one of the, one of the problems here though, is that, and it's, I don't see much, gnosis within neo-Gnosticism, right? Because it's,
what do you mean?
Well, so I guess like the gnosis is the actualization or the realization of the self and its role within the spiritual hierarchy or, you know, the cosmos and that kind of thing.
Right.
Whereas, I guess neo-Gnostic exploration usually delves into like Apocrypha and,
right.
Alternative religions like Mandeanism, Manichaeism, which are like the kind of only surviving Gnostic religions or whatever. And so, one of the things that you see within like neo-Gnostic culture is that the gnosis is tied to knowing these alternative histories and alternative mythologies, but there's not a lot of probing into like what those actually mean for the person.
What it looks like internally or personally.
So you don't see, so that process of enlightenment, right? So it, like we can think of gnosis as, which is like built into the Western esoteric tradition. Mm-hmm. And built into the occult framework, we view gnosis as our Western answer to the process of enlightenment. What is that actually? That is an interior project that happens through reflecting on the external world, right? So reflecting on these myths instead of taking them as literal things.
Right. Is it similar to, would that be like a process, this process of gnosis, would that be similar to like the great work?
Yes, exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm. So this is just another name for that.
That's another name for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I'm, you know, when I was doing research, it said like for Western esotericism, right, that the demiurge is seen as an intermediary force between the spiritual and the material or the divine and the material world. Right. And that it's the whole as above, so below, principle, you know, like that's, so if that's the case, I don't know, like, I mean, as above, so below, that doesn't account necessarily, does it, for the, struggle, strife, like prisoner kind of thing, you know, stuck here, does it?
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the things, like when we start talking about prisoner and we talk, this is where I like to, that this is when I kind of switch it to like karma, you know, and start talking about karma, because I feel like the concept of karma is the perfect the perfect way to explain. I think it's a lot better than
prisoner.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think it's a lot. Like, when you understand the concept of karma and karmas, I think it's a lot, it internalizes a lot better than you're trapped in the material, right? Because you're trapped in the material can be taken extremely
negative. Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, that sounds like trapped is that's a word that means that you're like at a disadvantage, yeah. That you're stuck, that you cannot leave, you know, like those are, yeah. Those aren't good.
So the, ideas. Yeah, so the within karmas, basically the process of removing your karmas, which would be the process of escaping the prison, right?
Okay.
The prison of the material is releasing your attachments and your aversions. Right?
Attachments to what?
Exactly. Attachments to what? So this can get pretty extreme, right?
I mean, yeah, because like, let's be real. We live in a society that requires money to get by, and you need to have things in order to survive. And like, this world is not conducive to a material free existence.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, you know, that's what happens when you have no material items, right? It's not good, typically speaking. So how do we balance that? Like how, if this is this actually is a thing that we need to be considering, then how do we balance that?
Well, I think the best that you can do is what you can do right now. Right.
Right.
So, I mean, remove as much as you can, you know, however, it's like, this is why I kind of think that mysticism is almost cheating, like monks, you know, like mystic monks that go live in a cave for 20 years.
That's like, yeah.
Yeah. It's because like, you don't have a family, you know?
Yeah. Like, I mean, that's the other thing. Like, we have to be attached to our family. Like,
yeah.
You know,
the thing is, like, where I stand right now, I know that, you know, I will always have certain attachments,
right.
You know? An attachment to my child.
Right.
An attachment to
my
job. But what I can do is I can eliminate the other attachments, right? Like my attachment to certain emotions or my attachment to certain ideas.
Or maybe it's more like an attachment to a preconceived notion of an outcome of something.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe it's a more like your desire to micromanage your life and control things at like, you know, the molecular level of making sure everything goes exactly as planned. Maybe that's the attachment, because people from the dawn of time do not like the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody likes it. Nobody likes to not know what's going on. You know, nobody likes to be like kind of in a state of limbo, and so we're really attached to these outcomes. Like we go to school and expect a job. Like you know what I mean? Like there's so many things like this. So maybe it's more of like just kind of going with
where
things take you. I don't know. You know, maybe that's hard.
I think for the occultist and for the magician, and like one of my favorite alchemical quotes comes from the Porta Alchemica, and I say it all the time. It's the Tao of the Sphere is no use to the blind. The Tao of the Sphere is basically that cross, the cross in the circle, right? That is the mundi. That is the earth. However, if you see in the Timaeus how the Demiurge creates the earth, he takes two strips of ratios, right? And one he lays vertical and one he lays horizontal, and he wraps them around in a sphere. And so if you can imagine that process, there's a Tao right there, right?
Okay.
And so the Magus is representative of the Tao. So this is kind of like the Gnosis of the Hanged Man card. Mm-hmm. The Hanged Man is the one that's like inverted.
Yeah.
This is why I absolutely love that card, because
I like it too. Yeah.
New
perspectives.
Because it's like that is the line that the magician crosses. The magician is the worldly person. Their head is in the world, but their feet are in the heavens, right? Mm-hmm. That is the magician. Where's the mystic's right side up? His head's in the heavens and his feet's on. Feet are on.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I see that.
So I think that when we are looking at the Demiurge in terms of like us as occultists or us as magicians, right? That demiurgy, basically what we're performing, right? However, demiurgy is not just the magician. It is all humans.
Yeah, because it's
everybody.
That struggle with limitation, ego, duality, right? Like, because if it's a god, but yet it's flawed.
Yeah.
Those things are kind of contradictory, right? Like from our typical viewpoint of the is all perfect.
So being. That is exactly, that is what leads to, like, there are hundreds of years. I mean, from, you know, post-Plato Platonism to middle Platonism to Neoplatonism, hundreds of years, guys are fighting about, well, how could God be perfect if the world is imperfect? And that's what necessitates this intermediary, which is the demiurge, right? And one of the things that you don't really see...
Convenient.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and this is what splits into all these different concepts. It splits into the idea of the Logos. It splits into the idea of Christ as the Logos,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
This splits into the demiurge is a bad guy. He uh-huh. is... the Old Testament God.
The Old Testament
yeah,
God.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
One. Yeah.
Or then there's the more ambivalent, like the demiurge is just, you know, the craftsman and the intermediary or whatever.
Right.
Which is the original Platonic and the Hermetic understanding of what the demiurge is.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, so, but like, what if it, okay, so I have I was thinking about this, and because I just finished that program in consciousness studies. Right. And we were talking a lot about in quantum field theory, quantum mechanics and physics and cosmology. What if it's the simulation theory? Like, so what if it's simulated? What if that's actually what we're talking about? It's like, you know, the creator of the code.
Yeah.
This is all simulation, right? That would bring, I mean, I think that that's probably the most likely, right? If it's yeah. at all anything, because that... For me, like that solves it, right? Because mm-hmm. it's like, okay, you start a code and then you let it kind of go itself and then have like out, but it's pre-written. It'd have to be mm-hmm. pre-written. So the Logos there would be the code or mm-hmm. whoever wrote the code. Mm-hmm. But in that case, then that means everything's predetermined, that there is no free will, right? Only the illusion of free will if it's pre-written code,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be?
Well, yeah. I mean, if everything was one, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, how would you escape? Would you find glitches in it? Get some admin level access to hack your code, right? Like hack the yeah. code to be able to obtain the gnosis that you need to cycle out of here or yeah. something, right? So, like, I don't know. I think the whole simulation theory kind of, like, when I was reading about this, I was like, this kind of reminds me of that. Like, where it's, mm-hmm. it's just like... This idea that there's something in control, something that controlled the start, at least. And now it's kind of on this offward path, you know, because, yeah, it's not perfect. This is definitely, if we're going by the idea that God is a perfect being mm-hmm. and it created Earth, yeah, there's some problems. There's yeah. some fucking problems with it. So can't be. Or... Maybe that is perfect. Maybe that's what it was intended to be. Because mm-hmm. So I think maybe there's an arrogance here with people saying, well, if God's perfect, how can this happen? How the hell do they know that this wasn't the intended outcome?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's normally people trying to grasp the concept of evil, right? The concept of decay, the concepts of suffering, right? Because if you're going with Plato's the good... Then, as like the Neoplatonic one, as the Jewish Yahweh, right?
Right.
And Christian God the Father. If you're gonna equate all of those, then the good, you know, cannot include evil and suffering. And I feel like Abrahamists have a really, really hard time grappling with the idea okay. that maybe evil is a part of the design.
It is. It has to be, because you know why? Because what, in 2022, there were those physicists that finally photographed for the first time a photon of light. Right? Photon. Mm-hmm. And what did it look like? The yin yang.
Oh yeah.
The exactly. Tile. Like the yin yang symbol is the actual image that they captured. Mm-hmm. And they weren't expecting that. I would have absolutely died if I was on that team, because like, that's not what we're looking for. But then that's what we get. Like that. So the fact that photons are the actual shape with all of the features of the yin yang symbol. And that symbol is, we've always been saying that it's duality, right? Like the good mm-hmm. and the bad, light and dark. then it has to be like it's encoded mm-hmm. in the atoms. Like, so that whole thing is there. So, but it's still one unit, right? Like it's still one thing. It's like the yin yang is a circle. And within that circle, there's the light and the dark, right? Mm-hmm. Or whatever. So I think when people get weirded out about duality and they're like, well, that's separate from the, you know, being one, right? Mm-hmm. No, it isn't, because you can have those two facets within itself, right? No? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, so I don't see why people have such a hard time understanding that there'd be if there's good, there's going to be the opposite of that.
Yeah.
Because what's the third law of Newton's, thermodynamics is that, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So if it's mm-hmm. good, there's bad. Right?
Yeah.
That seems like very simple to me. And then who's to say what is bad? Like, we know in this form, we know what bad is, I guess, because we're human, right? But this is not real. Like, this is not where we are at the end or eventually. So maybe in the scheme of things, there isn't really bad.
Yeah.
I don't know. But like, why are people so caught up on this?
Well, I think it mostly gets misinterpreted. I feel like a lot of neo-Gnosticism, the same as a lot of occultists, it's people that are leaving Christianity mm-hmm. or Abrahamism. And then Gnosticism's mythology tends to fill in a lot of gaps and a lot of holes if you take it literally, which a lot of Protestant Americans are taught to take Genesis literally,
right?
If you can take the Gnostic cosmology literally, the Demiurge literally, then it fills in all those gaps of, you know, well, if God is real, then why do bad things happen? Or even the atrocities that happen in the Bible that are committed by the God of the Bible himself, right?
Yeah, that old book is violent as heck. Like, it is, you know, and it's always weirded me out. Like, why it is that we take some of it literally, and then the other part we're like, oh, that's not what it really meant.
You know? I think you really, really have to be able to discern what parts of the Bible to take literally, what parts to take historically, and what parts to take symbolically, mystically. The biblical literacy is not something that is taught to religious people.
Oh, okay, because I'm pretty sure that the written and read words in the Bible are supposed to be directly from the mouth of God. And I believe that you're told that you're supposed to take those literally. And those are the worst ones. they're the worst ones. Like, stone your children if they backtalk you. Like, crazy shit.
But if you look at, the multiple author hypothesis, you can train.
Oh, yeah.
Like you can learn which parts of the Bible are coming from a trained religious priest that is trying to dictate a legal system to a theocratic society. You can take which are mystic pieces of literature from a mystic practitioner. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you're able to discern those parts of the Bible, right?
You are.
If you have biblical literacy,
people don't.
Are not trained in biblical literacy. Mm-hmm. They're trained in black and white thinking. And I think this is one of the things that drives me nuts about Gnosticism. And, you know, even as I hold Abrahamism very near and dear to my heart. I love those religions and respect those religions so much. But one of the worst things that I think came out of them was dualism. So I feel like dualism is like the mind virus that got introduced into Western society, because it's trained the Western man to think in these dualistic terms. And so there has to be some kind of reconciliation. You either have to throw religion out, or you have to overlook and commit a lot of, you know, double think in order to get over these the problem of evil and the problem of suffering. It's also largely why I kind of, in my explorations into philosophy, I kind of gloss over the explorations into morals and ethics, because that's not something for me to discern, right? Mm. Not as a mystic or spiritual practitioner or somebody that's trying to live an integrated existence with the universe, has to reconcile why bad things happen. And I think that mostly comes down to perspective. And it's why Gnosticism is so attractive for people if they have this false evil god that is external of them, that has put them in this prison, this thing that they view as a prison, yeah. right? They right. view it as a prison.
Yeah.
What are you looking at, right? And so you'll right. see, look at all the war, look yeah. at all, look at slavery, yeah. like, look at all these bad things, yep. look at all these bad things. It's like, but like, what about all these beautiful things, right? Because they're coexisting right next to each other.
Right.
And really what we're talking about is a chaotic universe that we cannot control. And the things that you are perceiving as bad are the things that you cannot control yourself.
That's what I mean. Right? Yeah.
So
yeah.
we're talking about this perception. Right. We're talking about the relinquishing of control. And so there's this thing, the reason that humans organize into societies is because they organize these codes about how people should operate and how right. people should treat each other. And they insulate themselves from nature because they're all coping and trying to deal with the fact that the universe is a chaotic place.
Right.
And the sun no could explode. Yeah. The sun could explode tomorrow. And it's people are using structure and order in order to insulate themselves from the chaos of actual existence. Right. And this is what separates us from the animals, right? Because if you think about an animal doesn't really have this developed idea of ethics or good and evil.
No.
You know?
They have built-in radar that tells them when bad stuff's happening and they leave. Yeah. We don't. Like, we stay put.
It's like, oh, that's dangerous. I'm going to run.
Yeah. You know? Like they yeah. fly away, or they like stomp away, you know, like they go stampede away, whatever. Like, and humans will build their house right in the middle of freaking Tornado Alley and keep rebuilding there. And then like every year when their house gets destroyed, they're like, God, why? It's like, what are you talking about? Yeah. Like we can't control those things. And we like to think that we can, I think, or that we're going to be spared.
Yeah.
Some way, shape or form. But like, yeah, nature's not evil like that. There's no, that's just neutral. Like that's just, it just is, right?
It just is. Exactly.
Yeah, it's not, that's what I mean when I said like, who are we to know what is actually mm-hmm. good or bad? Because it's bad to us because we lost stuff, but maybe it was our bad to begin with to put our stuff there, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, that's us not living hand in it, like us not living with nature. We're living like separate from it, right? You know, like we're trying to circumvent it somehow instead of like being one with it. We're not doing that anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't even go out in nature anymore, really, yeah. unless you drive far away from where you're usually living. So I get that. I mean, but there's this idea that the Demiurge created all of this. I've heard that it's out of either ignorance or it's like for its own twisted entertainment, like a reality show watching us all suffer.
But but where is that coming from?
That's what I've just read a lot of. I've read that everywhere.
Who's saying that? Is that neo-Gnostics? Because like, I mean, like,
it's like Hermeticism and Gnostics.
Hermeticism?
Yes. Yeah. That's bold. I mean, new, like that's what I was reading. Not like,
oh, they're everything. Like new people though, because I'm like, yeah. like you don't see like Plutarch doesn't talk about that.
No, this Philo is more recent. This is what yeah. people are thinking now, I think, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, where did that shift come into play?
That's a projection. That's an absolute projection, because it's like, I mean, the problem here, and we're skirting it. We're getting around, like, we're skirting it. We're mm-hmm. circumambulating what mm-hmm. the Demiurge actually is, right?
Uh-huh.
Walking around it. We haven't quite touched on it.
Yeah.
But that projection, like, if you are perceiving, you know, all the right. Demiurge as like, you know, what are you engaging in? Yeah. What are you viewing? Yeah. Right.
It's that whole RAS, the reticular assessing system in the brain, that's going to constantly verify mm-hmm. your perceptions. Like, so if you mm-hmm. think you're a prisoner of this planet, you're going to find confirmation of that everywhere you look and completely black out the things that are contrary to that, right?
Yeah.
So the good stuff won't register because you're focused on the bad stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So is it us then? It's just us. It's our own internal processes. Or what is it? What is it actually, like, besides this external force?
This external malevolent god that's hell-bent on making you suffer?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Well, what, yeah.
Okay, so let's think about it. It's this intermediary, right, between the sensible and the intelligible, right? So this perfect realm of ideas and this material plane that gets ordered. And it's this intermediary that has to order those ideas and express them in the sensible world. It's religion.
That's what it does.
Oh.
Religion does it. That's maybe what it tries to do, right?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I mean, but it's like, it's this intermediary, right? Right. Is the Tao of the sphere, is the Son of Man on the cross, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know how much clearer it can be. So I'm gonna walk back to Genesis, right?
Yeah.
When we were talking about what happens with Adam and Eve in the garden with the tree of knowledge and the snake, right? And what we know about the snake, as an ancient symbol, it kind of represents eternity almost, right?
The Ouroboros.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if we're talking about this eternal nature tricking the feminine principle, right? So, like, what have we talked about in previous about, you know, the anima and the animus in previous podcasts. So what is Eve representing there, you know, or what would the Gnostic Sophia be representing? Right. And so if we can associate the Gnostic Sophia with the Kabbalistic Chokmah, right? So the wisdom principle, okay? So we're talking about the subconscious amorphous, right?
Yeah.
And it's eating from knowledge, okay? So what we know about knowledge is knowledge happens when Chokmah is channeled through Bina, which is understanding, right? Right. So if you have this amorphous wisdom and then you have to order it with understanding, you have to lay down in order to give it this form, and then you have knowledge. Okay. So this is the process of, you know, how God emanates the universe into creation with the Kabbalists.
Right.
This is the process of when something comes through you. Like when you are creating, when you are participating in creation, this is the process that you are going through, or where you are bringing something in to understanding. This is the process that you go through, right? So if you talking about the subconscious mind eating from the tree of knowledge, now we're going to take a step back into Terence McKenna and John Allegro, where they place a lot of emphasis on humans becoming humans and civilizing themselves because of the development of language, right?
Right.
So if we're going to take the development of language as this kind of, these are the symbols that we start organizing and ordering our world through, right? And it starts to begin to filter us.
Right. Well,
so instead of now looking at the apple and accepting the apple as an apple, we think of the word apple and the symbol, that word apple becomes the apple. Now there's a filter. We aren't actually engaging in the apple itself,
right?
That filter right there. And then that gets categorized.
The schema of an apple.
Yes. And so we're beginning to order and organize, right?
Right.
So like when Adam and Eve eat from the tree of knowledge, right? If we can take this as the development of language and the ordering of our worlds within our conscious mind, right? So this is the fall from grace, the fall into original sin. When we realize we are naked and there is evil in the world, we were able to look at the tiger that is attacking the deer or whatever and say that is horrific, that is gruesome, that is bad, right?
Before it was
then
just
all of a sudden we have assigned bad. We have made an assignment of bad, right?
Right.
And then
the labels.
Yes. When we start organizing the world around us and we start putting it into different categories, linguistic categories.
Right.
And we create this world. And this is what happens when we develop worldviews, when we develop ideologies, when we develop systems, right? Everything. Yep. When we develop laws, when we develop society,
right?
And it's all done with language, and language is the tool that we use to order the world around us. And then this will go back into Kabbalah, you know, where God creates the universe using a series of letters. It's your right. binary code that you're talking about. Right. There's 22 instead of two digits, right? Right. And everything gets ordered. And it's funny, too, because the Jews believe that the Torah is what God created the universe. Like, when God was creating the universe, he was reading the Torah as, like, almost a blueprint on how to create the universe, right?
So the Torah existed before.
Well, yeah, so this is this kind of, like, this is getting into some heavy mystic territory, yeah. right? So this is why they believe that their language is, that book is holy, and they believe that that language is holy and sacred, and the entire universe is constructed out of their alphabet and their language. So really, like, we're talking about the utilization of language mm-hmm. in order to order the world around us, which introduces us to ideas and categories that, like, I don't like that.
Yeah.
And it introduces a separation. Instead of experiencing the apple directly, we're experiencing the word apple that is now taking the place of the apple. Okay. And this is how that separation comes between the material and God. That is where God stops being present in the universe, is when we are signing that separation instead of just existing, instead of just being. And so then when we jump back into this idea of the karmas, the chains of karmas, the attachments and the aversions, right?
Right.
The things that are filtering you from that direct presence, okay? Uh-huh. That's tying us into this order. What are you attached to? What ideologies are you attached right. to? What words are you attached to? What things do you think are bad are you attached to? And if mm-hmm. you were to remove your perspective, put it in a different perspective, let's say put it in an animal's perspective, or put it in the perspective of, like, my perspective is that of the sun, right?
Okay.
You know?
Right. I mean, no, I understand.
So
I understand
then all of a sudden we have a created world, a creative universe, mm-hmm. a creative perception. And then we're looking at it. I am trapped in a prison. You built that prison. You built it.
Right.
You built it.
Created it with
you,
everybody else,
you
right?
are exactly you to brick by brick, mm-hmm. word by word, idea by idea,
label by label,
by label. Ideology. You constructed that prison.
Yeah.
That the world is bad. That
yes,
existence is bad. True. Instead of just existing in being.
Yeah. No, it's true. Like, because let me just say that when I had my, like, I don't bring it up a lot, but it's true. It relates to so much stuff that we talk about. Like, when I had my near-death experience, there are so many things I experienced during that time that I cannot put in words. I cannot. Like, I can see it in my mind. I understand what it was, but I cannot share it with the other people because there's no language for it. And it's not like I don't know how else to say it. It's like, even if there, I don't know how there could be words to possibly explain it, right? So, but it made perfect sense, like perfect sense and very easy to understand in that form. Right. But now, like, I can't, like, it's not possible. Mm-hmm. And so there'll be stuff, there is stuff from that experience that I have never told anybody because I can't, I literally cannot. And I would love to, it's like, I feel like it would be better to just put my hand on someone's forehead and, like, you know, like, push through that, like, understanding somehow. That I think that's easier, like, to be done than be able to articulate it mm-hmm. in words. And I think, and as we're talking about this, I think that now I get why, because that's one of the things that it can't take away. Because if I was able to label it, it would take it away. Do you know what I mean?
Like, oh yeah, no, because it would yeah. delineate. It right. would you'd create a definition. You'd create a yeah. separation.
Yeah.
Right. And so you'd be, you know, what you had was an experience where you were one. With
yeah.
everything yeah, yeah. and every iteration yep. of yourself
myself,
and,
yep.
and that I kind of, you experienced that.
I did.
The second you start delineating it, then all of a sudden you were,
but that's not even
work.
Like, that's true, yeah. but it's not, because it's like, it was so, so much more than that. I can't possibly, that's the best possible closest thing I could come to describe it. Right.
Yeah.
But no, but I get it now. Like, just as we're recording this right now, like, I was like, oh, that's why, because if I was able to verbalize it, it wouldn't be special anymore. Like, it wouldn't have the same meaning. Like, weird. Like, that's so crazy. It would take away from it or something. Like, so I get language. So language is the problem.
I wouldn't say language is the problem. I'd say it's only the problem if you think it's the problem. Right.
Right.
So I think what I'm really touching on right now, what we're really exploring is that you are the demiurge. You are the one. If the universe exists because for you to experience it, right? If it's through your perception, then how are you perceiving that universe? You know, and if you are perceiving the universe through there's an external, invisible, evil God that created the universe and trapped me in this prison planet, you constructed that universe. You did that because you're the one that's perceiving it.
No, so true, so true. Like, because as somebody that lived like that for a long time with that idea in my head of like, this life is unfair, you know, things are bad. And then one day just saying, you know, this isn't working anymore. Like, let's try something different. And then from that moment forward, it has been totally different because my only thing that changed was my perception of it. Like, that's it. Literally. Like, I haven't really done anything different just other than how I frame things, like stop being negative and living in the things I can't control, you know, like focusing on those things that aren't in my control. Mm-hmm. Things are wildly different. Yeah. And when people ask me, because people noticed, like you've heard, so, you know, like at my birthday party, some friends I hadn't seen in a long time, they're like, you're so different. What happened? That's it. That was it. Like, and my life changed. Like everything started to shift. So but that's so, it sounds so simple.
It's not.
It's fucking hard.
It's not. It took me 30 years. Yeah. And I spent a year completely restructuring, restructuring my priorities, restructuring my beliefs, my ideology, like everything, everything I thought I knew. I had to tear it down. I had to break it. And then I had to be very careful about what I was engaging in and choose what to engage in. And then from there, it's like I have the choice every single day. And in every single moment, I have the choice. How am I going to take this? How am I going to perceive this? Because I am the demiurge. I am creating my world.
Yes, we are.
Through perception, right? And this is not, I mean, the magician is especially a demiurge, right? Because we believe in the use of language in order to command the universe around us. We are hyper aware of, you know, our internal state and what's going on externally.
Hopefully you are. Yeah. Like, hopefully if you're doing magic, you are somewhat stable in that way so that you can affect positive change. Right. Because I feel like if you're living in that shit, right. What you're going to draw to you is going to be more shit. Like, because it like attracts like, right. So I definitely think it's so simple. But it's so simple, it's so hard. Because I think in humans, we overcomplicate everything. You know, we make things much harder. It seems like that's all I have to do is change my perspective. No, that can't be it. That's too easy. Yeah. I thought that way for a long time until I finally just said, you know what do I got to lose here? You know? And then, wow, it changed. But nobody listened, so it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And it's everybody's, and then maybe some that antecedent to that happening to you or the catalyst to that happening to you is going to be different for everybody. Right. Mm-hmm. So, and you could have bottom, like you could hit bottom and it not be the one that's going to take you there either. Right.
Yeah.
Like, because I think we've all multiple times thought we're like at the lowest and then we still didn't get it.
Oh yeah. I've been a lot lower than the low when I completely like reorganized myself and when I was broken, right? Uh-huh. When I was completely shattered, when I was completely broken and I just finally like, I finally let everything happen, right?
Yeah.
Like, that low was nowhere near as bad as the ones I had been through before.
Same. Yeah. Same. Like it's almost like the ones before were like preparation for you to get to the point where you could be low, but still functional, like to where you could make that. Just choice, that cognizant choice to be thinking in a different way and to see things different. Because no matter what happens, like as bad as it could possibly be, there's always going to be a lesson for you there. There's always going to be a benefit, even to the worst things. Like, and it might take forever. It might take years. It might take decades. It could take weeks or days. I don't know. But like for you to see it, you know, but it is there. Like, and I know like some people disagree, but give it some time and then revisit it and be like, what did you take from, what did you learn from it? And maybe you don't, maybe you're a person that just can't do it. Maybe you're somebody that just takes all the negatives, doesn't see any benefit, but that's a perspective thing too, right? Like it's how you choose to frame your experiences, right? And yeah, I definitely think so. For people that are in the prison planet mindset, right? Like we're trapped and our divine sparks are trapped. What do they do to overcome this?
Well, that is a symptom of self-centeredness, right? Mm. Being trapped in self, right? Because everything's
me.
Well, the world that you're living in is in relation to like your immediate wants and needs, right? So if you're not like, it's not in relation to presence or existing, because I promise you, like me and you are sitting here right now, right?
Yeah.
Sitting here right now.
Yes.
This moment could be a lot darker than it is, right? It could be a lot darker. I could be trapped in self, or I could be just present, existing. There's nothing here right now except me and you having this conversation.
Right.
So what am I a prisoner of? Even then, when bad things happen, you know, how are you taking those bad things?
Right.
Like, what did I tell you? I told you last night, right? I was like, I dance in suffering or whatever.
What?
It's like, I dance in suffering. I'm an alchemist.
Yeah. I was like, but true. And I have that old school belief also that like, you know, nothing worthwhile is easy and nothing easy is worthwhile like that. And then some people would say that that's a pessimistic view, but I learn from the bad stuff, right? Like I do, like I choose to not let it break me. Like I choose, that's a choice. You could be like, you know what? This sucks, you know, or you could be like, yeah, that sucked and onward. You know what I mean? Like, but I think it's hard to have that kind of resilience. Resiliency is important.
Well, here. So the self, so like if we're going to put that as being a symptom of, you know, being trapped in self,
an ego,
trapped in ego, or basically like we're talking about original sin here. Like how does evil get introduced to the world? How does sin get introduced to the world? It is through perception, it is through delineation, it is through fear, right? Is that separation? It is that, you know, I need to protect my immediate wants and needs, and anything that threatens that or threatens the order or threaten the order that I've imposed on the world around me is evil or bad or not good. Right. So how do you escape that? All the world's religions and philosophies have this coded into them, and it's like always glossed over, you know, and I'm going to say the Christians are right on this one.
Okay.
You know, acts of humility. So it's going to be your your charity. In Hermeticism, one of the Hermetic virtues, one of the things that you're going to clean, seven Hermetic virtues, 12 Hermetic sins, basically. Mm-hmm. But you're going to cleanse a lot of those Hermetic weaknesses or whatever. Humility is going to, acts of humility are going to be the things that cleanse that.
What was an act of humility?
Well, I'm talking about service, charity, volunteering, you know.
Why is that?
Acts of selflessness.
Selflessness.
Yes, okay. Exactly. Yeah. So that's one of the things I talk to people about a lot, especially it's really, really hard in the occult, because occult people, they hear you talking about like this kind of language, and they're immediately just turned off. You're a crypto Christian. Like, yeah, exactly. They're just like, shut up. Like, that's not why I do magic. However, it was like when I discovered that formula, you know, it was like every week, like just do one thing that is not for me. You know, some act of volunteering, of service work within my community. And at first it's a chore. At first it's like,
it's supposed to be,
I'm doing this as an altruistic thing. And then it's kind of like going to the gym. It's like, I feel off if I don't do this. Right. And then so, you know, and I joke about it. It's like, no such thing as real altruism, you know, and especially like when I'm doing that work, like I'll tell the people that I'm helping, like, don't get it twisted. Like I'm doing this for myself.
Like you're doing it to feel good that you're doing a thing for other people.
Yeah.
So it's still in the it's still in the ego in some way. But I think that you get a pass there because it's like, if you're doing if you're not just doing it for show, that's different.
After a while, it turns into like, this is just something that I
do.
You know, at first it's like, I'm forcing myself to do this, and you've got all the weird feelings associated with it. Like, either I don't want to do this, or am I really doing this out of altruism, or
it's taking up my free time,
or you get a little vain about it. You know, that's when you first start doing it, but that's okay. That's totally okay. Right. You know? So it's like, you first start doing it, and then after a while it just becomes, it's like, this is something that I do, and it helps me maintain. It helps cultivate that I'm not delineated. Right.
Right.
Because I promise you, when you are there and you are helping somebody and you're not getting paid for it, like, this is the most important thing. Like, you cannot get paid for this. Mm-hmm. The second you introduce money, it messes up the whole dynamic. Right.
Right.
But when you're doing that, then those anxiety, like, it develops a sense of community first, right, which I think is really important, but it eliminates that kind of delineation that you're making between, you know, self and selfless. And when it becomes like a natural thing that you're kind of doing, then you're a lot more organized on, you know, I am setting a boundary for myself to protect, like, my needs and my wants, and this doesn't bother me. That doesn't concern me.
Right.
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 Like, that's not a bad thing. That's not just concern me. Because you can definitely see somebody, one of the major symptoms of somebody trapped in self is when they are pointing at the world around them and they are saying, that's bad. That's evil. Know. That's,
or it's not my fault. This happened to me, or that happened to me. And like, this person hates me. Yeah, I know. Like, and it grosses me out. Like, but I used to be that person. I absolutely did. But like, okay, the thing that I took away, like the message that I got when I died for those 6 minutes was that exactly this, what we're talking about. It was that, like, the key to everything is to just be nice. Like, that was it. Like, I literally, that's what I took away, was like, everything would be fine on this planet. Everything would be perfect. Everything would be perfect if we could all learn to get the fuck along, but we cannot. Like, people cannot let things go. Like, they can't see past the veil of separation and indifference with other people, you know, whatever religion, orientation, race, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, all of those things that are just these masks that are fake, they're not real. Like, we're all exactly the same thing underneath all of it. And like, if we could just all get along, like, and we can't, like, there's just people that are just too stuck in the self, right? Like, they're just too, they can't just, even though that's what's preached in the Bible and all of the other religious books, is like, you know, be nice to your neighbor. Like, nope, can't do it. And it's like the simplest thing, right? Like, it's like, just be nice. Like, it doesn't bother. Well, it doesn't concern you what other someone else's religion is.
This is the difficult thing about it, because like, if you are in that state, you don't, like, everything is perceived as an attack, right?
Right.
And it's really, really hard to recognize that you're in a bad, like, you're in a bad perspective, that, like, you, that you have, you have built a bad perspective for yourself when you're perceiving everything as like, this is either limiting me, or this person's trying to stop me, or the government is trying to stop me, or,
we allowed that.
People hate, like groups of people hate me and don't like me. And it's like, these are all.
So what's the common denominator here?
Exactly.
You. Like, exactly. You're it. Like, it's, well, you.
So it's really hard. It's really hard to recognize that. So it's like, you can be a religious person and you can still get stuck in this, because the perspective that you've become trapped in, the prison that you've become trapped in, is being reinforced by how you perceive threats to your sense of self.
Right.
And so the cure for that, the cure to escape that is to get out of yourself.
Exposure therapy, you know?
Get out of yourself.
Yeah. You got to do the things. You got to be around the things you don't think you're scary or you don't like. It's exposure therapy. Like, get over yourself, literally. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's really super simple at the idea level, but like, in the application and you know, it's impossible, almost.
The actions themselves are really easy,
right? But
the thing is, it is so foreign like setting that up to where you are like, you were like, oh, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to call, like, I really don't like my mom, but I'm going to call her today. And I'm going to see how she's doing. And I'm going to ask her and I'm going to listen to her problems, you know?
Yeah.
Like, setting up those behaviors is like it. They are really simple actions, but setting up those behaviors is so hard, so difficult. But that is like it is those random acts of selflessness,
right,
that take you out of self, right? And you'll start noticing too, because you'll find yourself slipping back into that perspective, that this prison planet perspective.
Right, because like
everything's
happen.
out to get me. And if you've realized the power of escaping that through acts of selflessness, right? If you've realized the power of that, then you'll immediately be like, oh, I'm falling back into that perspective. I need to go do something really quick just to like pull myself out.
It is hard.
Yeah.
Because we have external variables, right, that we can't control. So like other people that aren't enlightened, aren't on the same path, that are in the negative, like victim or whatever kind of mentality, that we have to interact with all the time.
Yeah.
And that stuff can get annoying. I mean, it gets really frustrating. Like I have a hard time. So I have like, you know, I read cards, right, for people. And like, it's one of the things I do for services. I give free readings out like to people that can't afford it. You know, I'm like, you just, all you have to do is send me like a quick email, tell me what your problem is and I'll assess, right? You know, and I usually do. But like what I can't stand is when I get the ones that take like advantage and keep asking the same questions about the toxic situation they've created for themselves. Mm-hmm. And then refuse to hear it. Like when they come, you know what I mean? You know how people do this, right? Like this is very common. People are constantly in the same cycle patterns of toxic stuff. And then they're like vent to everybody they know. But then never take any of the advice that anyone gives them. And then they are wondering why they're still in the same spot. You know, it's like that kind of stuff can really weigh on you if you're like trying to escape that, like to have people like that around, you know?
Oh yeah.
It's really hard. You gotta, you know, how do we deal with that? How do we, if we're trying to still be in service to people, right? How do we?
Well, okay. So I think this happens between people with your same bullshit, right?
Yeah.
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 So like me and you, we're the exact same type of nuts, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like you gotta find you gotta find those people that,
yeah,
understand your bullshit, right?
Yes. And like,
so I think, so I'm not gonna talk about that. I'm just gonna lay an example,
okay, right?
Let's say you've been incarcerated and you have a soft spot for inmates, right?
Yeah.
Just go down there and fucking talk to one of them, right, or something, right?
Yeah, or like
that
battered women.
That's what you're talking about. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You go, yep. That's your act of selflessness.
Yeah. However, but okay, that being said, that's where it gets so frustrating, because when you do that and you meet with people and you've overcome that aspect of yourself that was like, you know, putting you in those positions or whatever it is, or like whatever you have like a soft spot for whatever is going on, it's probably because you've experienced it, right? And like, and you can talk to and from and about those kinds of wounds, right, to people so that they know you're not bullshit, that they can relate to you. But then, you know, you do that, and then there's always that one that's just like, just continually doing the same things, and you're just like, oh my God.
Well, I think, yeah, so I think it's difficult because you don't want to, so this is, because if you're talking about within your friend circle.
No, or like strangers.
Yeah. If you're talking about within your friend circle, that's when you run into becoming an emotional sponge and enabling people, right?
Right. But I mean, I'm talking about random people too, but they will come back because they feel they have a connection to you because you understand, right? Because you've been there. Yeah. And then, but then they're doing like, they're like, how did you get out of it? And you tell them, and then they just like don't hear it. And you keep, and you see them continually putting themselves in bad space. That can like weigh down on. So how do you separate yourself from that? Like when you run
How do you
that?
Establish boundaries?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm bad at that. In case you didn't know,
you know,
boundaries are hard.
I'll give him two chances.
Two,
and if he messes up a third time, I'm just gonna say, sorry, man. Like, you like hit me up when you're doing better, you know?
Yeah.
Just like that.
Do chances. Okay. I give way more than that. Yeah. Unfortunately, I think I need to cut it down. So if the demiurge or the stimulation are imperfect, right?
Yeah.
Or malevolent. What does that mean for our understanding of morality and purpose?
Oh, I cannot talk about morality.
Okay, fine, I know.
I drive people up a wall.
Oh, I have.
When I talk about morals.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Makes them so mad.
Yeah.
I'm so mad, dude.
I understand where you're coming from completely. But
I know
like
you
most
do.
People don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't talk about morals.
No. Okay. We'll skip that. How about just purpose?
What do you mean purpose?
Like if purpose you are, in life, like, you know, if it's malevolent and imperfect, right?
Are you malevolent? My whole thing that I'm getting at here is that you're the demiurge.
No, I know that.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I get that.
You are the demiurge. Totally your conscious awareness is the demiurge.
Of course it's us.
Like, it is the thing that orders and builds the universe.
Yeah. Yes. Our own. That's how everyone, and that is perfectly, that explains perfectly how everybody has a different perspective
so
of
then,
the same things.
So
right?
then, yeah. So then are you malevolent?
Good point. I mean, no, I'm not, but. That's the
Some
question people need to ask themselves, right?
Is that why like an angry person lives in a world of anger?
Yes. Yes.
Because yeah. they are a malevolent demiurge.
Yeah. They're creating their own. Yeah. They're the Eight of Swords. The Eight of Swords. They're trapped in their own.
So then if you were created by an evil, angry Old Testament God that trapped you into a prison planet, what is that saying about the world that you built? Who built that world?
Yeah, right.
Because you are the angry.
Yeah, but 9 out of 10 people don't get that, right? You know, I mean.
Well, yeah. So this is why I say there's no gnosis and no Gnostics, because if you you go into Gnostic, like neo-Gnostic circles online or whatever, it feels like you've just walked into hellfire and brimstone, like
because it's
Christian
your abdicating
group or
personal responsibility for your own suffering and misfortune onto some external force that you can't control so that you can feel better about yourself. It's just like being a bully and bullying other people. It's like you're putting out what's bothering you onto something else. It's the same concept. It's just this immature, like very human way of thinking. Right. I mean, so free will, right? Free will. Is it real? Do we have free will?
That's so hard. I can't. I don't know about that.
I don't know.
I have no idea.
I think we have the idea. I think we have the illusion of free will.
So I think if you're talking about what delineation is, right? Like if you're talking about that, you know, if everything is one and
then
the only thing that's separating the one is that you're creating arbitrary perceptions in order to give things form.
Right.
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 So then something like choice
is within a finite amount of things.
Yeah. It's just like a groove.
So it's like, it's the microcosm. Like, so each one of us is a microcosm of the macro, right? Like, so we're all just doing our own little worldly experience, but that's just so as a whole, we have the whole picture, right? Like that's what it is. It's like the Russian nesting dolls kind of thing. It's like within itself. So, okay. So like, you know, in like antiquity, there's many stories of civilizations that have been wiped out at a point of, at some point in time, right? Mm-hmm. And they're always talked about in mythology and stuff as these very illuminated societies, right? Like, you know, that's when they get cut out, right? Mm-hmm. Do you think that the rise of AI and quantum computing could be interpreted as humanity approaching its own demiurgic power?
Yes.
You know, and like creating the nest, because we are what you're saying is we're creating nested simulations within the whole, right?
Yeah.
Like each one of us has our own little world, that we, how we perceive everything and how we frame things. And that's our own little nested simulation within the simulation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or within the world, a world within world, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is that what's happening? Are we finally getting to the point where like, are we headed towards, you know, like,
so this brings me
wiped out.
I really think this is the only time you'll, I'm going to do this, but
what?
There's the show Westworld. Have you ever seen it?
No.
Okay. The first season of Westworld, I think, is like an even better Gnostic mythology.
Oh, you told me about it, right?
Than The Matrix, right?
Okay.
Because basically, at the end of the show, the guy who built the simulation or whatever realizes that he's a robot that's trapped. Like, he built the simulation so that he could upload his consciousness into this robot, and then the robot's trapped in the simulation and completely forgot that he was the one that created the simulation. And so it's like this complete meta kind of like mind fuck that happens here, but it's like it's the demiurge trapping himself in his own creation and forgetting his divine nature,
right? Yeah.
Which is what we as occultists and magicians are trying to go back to, and we're realizing, like, what we're realizing is our divine nature, like what we actually are, right?
Right.
We are demiurgos trapped in our own creations, right? And then so when you start getting into what is that called? Transhumanism?
Yeah.
When you upload your consciousness into the AI or the computer or whatever.
That happens. I saw that when I died. I saw that happening. Did I tell you that part? I saw that. I saw that all. Oh my gosh. I don't think I've ever said this before on camera. Okay. Because it sounds too weird. But that is one of the things I saw. I was like standing up somewhere looking down, and I saw all this, like a conveyor belt. I'm not joking. Like, it was like a fucking conveyor belt of people that had just died that were going in this line, and they were going into I don't know what. It was like some light thing. And I knew exactly what was happening. And their consciousness was being uploaded into the mainframe, quote unquote. But they didn't get, their memories weren't lost, you know what I mean, to them. But they were just processed through this thing. And it was like uploading all of their consciousness into the cloud. Like, I don't even, those are my earth terms for it. But like, and I saw that. Like, I actually saw that happening. And it made perfect sense. Like, I was like, oh, that's the collective you know what I mean? That's what that is. I literally saw that happening. That, you know, that was the only aspect of that entire situation that I could have possibly brought from the other side, like, over, because I knew about, like, collective unconscious, right? But other than that, everything else was completely unique. But, like, okay, so if we all have this, so in Gnosticism, right, like, there's the divine spark is trapped, but not extinguished, right? It's still there, and it's like our job to uncover that little flame, like that flicker of divinity in us, right? And to understand it. So, okay, so in simulation theory, I have this idea that perhaps when we start to uncover our intuition, when we start to have like our spiritual awakenings or whatever, that is our like cue that there's this, that the divinity within us is real, connected back to source. It's like the starting of that unfolding of the pathway to that. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, cause you know, some people say that they are not intuitive at all. They've never had any kind of weird, you know, pop of information or anything like that, you know? And then some of us have, I wonder if that's because the ones that are having it are maybe more on that path, like closer to realization of it.
Maybe,
you know,
I'm not sure.
I don't know. I mean, if it's so AI, what?
Yeah, so, like, within Gnosticism, I mean, there's a large sect of Gnosticism that believe that there are people that can't do it.
That they're just, I believe that, too.
Incapable of it.
I absolutely.
That they don't have those sparks or sparks.
Oh, they don't have the spark at all?
They don't.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay.
They're NPCs, just, they're basically, the NPCs, they're automatons.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. No, I think that those people are existing too. I feel like I know a couple of them. They're just life soulless people.
I cannot justify that. I mean, I'm a person that believes that planets have spirits.
No, I believe it. So look, it's like Earth's still, of course it is.
So it's if I am a magician and I believe that, like, basically there are spirits in everything, right? In everything.
Okay, maybe not a soul.
Then I can't.
Maybe a lower vibrational spirit.
Soul. I don't know. Intelligences, for sure.
Sure. Right? But I mean, Well, or they're robots, they're avatars.
I mean, if I believe that I can talk to a gas giant, right, and get instructions from its spirit,
right,
and that the spirit of a ball of gas floating out there in the middle of a void.
Yeah. I mean,
ball of gas.
Wait, yeah.
I'm just kidding.
For real, though?
If you're going to assume that space is real.
If we're going to assume space is real, okay? Look, NASA straight up lies to us. Like, you know it's true. I'm going to say it. Like, they're full of shit. NASA's brand new. Okay? No. They make up those pictures. None of that shit's real. None of those nebula that are beautiful and colorful are at all like that. That's not true. Like, open up any of those images from their direct website, right click it, and it'll say freaking goddamn Photoshop right there. And it'll show all of the edits have been done. It's maddening. Like, I was so mad when I found that out. Like, in case y'all didn't know, I'm not lying. Look it up. They make it up. Because it's allegedly gases, whatever elements that are out there. We don't fucking know. We're so full of shit. But like, let's pretend that we're flying through the universe on a rock planet, 75% water.
Yeah.
Being held down to it by an invisible force field called gravity. And that all makes perfect sense to us. But none of this other stuff does. You're nuts. Like that, you can't, how do you have... How can you believe in one and not the other things? Like, it's crazy to me. So we have, like, I think that it's possible that you can talk to a gas giant, because if we're out in outer space right now, really, that's how we're rocking through the universe of anything's
but
possible.
But I can't, okay, so I can't necessarily justify, like, I believe it's cognitive dissonance to believe that I can engage with the spirit of a gas giant, but that some people walking around don't have souls.
Why not? Maybe they're put there on purpose to be like, I don't know.
By who? By what?
Whatever put us here.
But I mean, this whole thing.
I mean, why not? Because so I'm going to tell you again, on the other side, there's no emotion.
Yeah.
There's not any emotion. Like, there was no stress. Whatever. It was one emotion and that was it. And it was, I hate it. It sounds so cheesy, but you know, it was like just really lovely. Okay. And just peace. Okay. I won't say love. I'm going to say peace. It was like, just everything's good, right? Like, there's nothing's wrong. Okay. At all. Nor can there be something wrong. Nobody's lying. No one can lie. Like, it's none of the things that we do here that are perceived as not good, you know, or whatever, are possible on the other side like that. So why can't it be that it's just to get people upset? Like, why can't it be that there's some things that are put here that are just like aggravators, right? Like, because if our experience here is about experiencing emotions because we don't have them else in the other form, right, then why not? It doesn't have to be like a soul is somebody that can experience emotions, right? That's what we can experience. If they don't have a soul but they can pick at us, you know, is it just like a program, like part of the program, just to kind of stir things up?
Yeah.
To elicit different, emotional responses from people. Why not? That doesn't negate the fact that people have souls. Just like some people aren't people.
Yeah.
You know, some people aren't like that.
Wait, so you think that this is all program?
Yeah.
Binary code?
Yes. I see it. Like, I can see the number, like sometimes, not all the time, but I can see the actual, like in the air at times. There's like a code that runs through it. And there's that guy, Danny Goler, who just is able to show it with that refracted light laser. And he has people that, and he's replicating that experiment right now. Like, he's sent it out. He gave out the protocol and people are replicating it. They're seeing the code.
So if I mean, earlier when I said that the Jews believe that God constructed the universe using the Torah.
Right.
And you thought, what? Well, I'm just saying, like, isn't that the same
Torah
thing?
Like, I don't know if it's the Torah, but like something, like some numbers.
Yeah.
Like,
no, I'm just saying, aren't those like the same things, though?
Kind of. I mean, I guess I just think that, I mean, what they're saying is then like that book existed concurrently with for always or forever. Like, how?
Let me pull up the quote. But
yeah, that would be great.
Yeah.
I mean, if. Okay, so like, but gnosis, understanding. I don't know that we can really understand that we are part of that, you know, that we are divinity ourselves, because again, I experienced it firsthand, but as soon as I came back here, it was like, okay, I experienced that, but that's not real here. You know what I mean? It's real there, but not here. I think that the filters are so heavy that it's going to be really hard for people to actually get it, you know, because because if it were true in a literal sense, we would like poof cease to exist once we realized it, right? Because we wouldn't be part of it anymore. But that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Or does it?
So this is Genesis Rabbah 1:1. The Torah declare Rabbah Hushai of Caesarea. He's a friend of Origen. So Origen is one of the very first Christian writers, and he was or Christian thinkers, and he was a Platonist that was going over first principles, injecting it into Christian theology. But anyways, the Torah declares, I am the working tool of the Holy One, blessed be he. In human practice, when a mortal king builds a palace, he builds it not with his own skill, but with the skill of an architect. The architect, moreover, does not build it out of his head, but employs plans and diagrams to know how to arrange the chambers and the wicket doors. Thus, God consulted the Torah and created the world, while the Torah declares, in the beginning God created, beginning referring to the Torah.
Okay. Right, because he spoke it into existence, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So that's
so language again is key here. The words.
Yeah. So in the Sefer Yetzirah, the process that's, it goes a little bit, the entire Sefer Yetzirah is detailing the process of how God spoke the universe into existence, which is why I think Sefer Yetzirah is the most important piece of Kabbalah for the magician or the occultist. Mm-hmm. But anyways, it's an act of engraving, right? And it's about the enunciation, right, on the tongue and the placement of the letters, right?
Right, yeah.
Through a process of visualization. And it ends up creating geometries, right? Spatial dimensions.
Well, sure, so, because your voice is frequency,
yeah,
right? And like we know frequency can create in the shape, right?
Yeah, so in the Sefer Yetzirah, he's placing the alphabet as basically like vertices in a three-dimensional or four-dimensional space. And it is this dynamic, this contrast between the different letters that creates the, I guess, matrix of spatial dimension.
Right. Right. No, I mean, like those, the code that I see is kind of looks like Hebrew a little bit, but not.
Yeah.
But not.
It's a holy language.
It's very.
100%.
It's very.
The language we got.
Similar, like kind of like it's not hieroglyphics. It's not Chinese. It's not. It's something in between. It's very.
It looks like Semitic.
Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say it looks. There's some letter, there's some symbols that look like that. And that's what that guy's experiments are showing too. All the people that are writing in and like writing down what they're seeing with the laser are seeing the same shapes that I can see. Like, and I don't need to use the laser. Like I can just see it sometimes. And that's why I think it's a code. I've been seeing it for years. Like since I was a kid, I thought everybody could see it. Like, I thought everyone saw it. But like with the occult though, with occult practices, like, do you think that rituals, meditations, or other practices can interact with this concept or construct of demiurge? And if so, would that be like, except like, would you be, is it like a shadow side? Would it be like kind of a Jungian thing that we have to reconcile with?
I don't view the demiurge as malevolent or evil. I view the demiurge as the magician, that very first card, the act of creation. When you create, you're co-participating with creator, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like the act of creation, and it's like, well, you are. So what it was just saying there is, so basically like the carpenter is not like actually, something's not coming out of him for carpentry. He is impressing like his understanding onto the wood in order to give the wood form, mm-hmm. right? And that's how carpentry works.
Right.
That is the act of creation. So
right.
I think the act of, like what the magician does, what the artist does, basically anytime you're acting within that demiurgic capacity where you are taking from this realm of ideas, this realm of forms, those things that are beautiful, and you are manifesting it outward. Right. That is an act of demiurgy, right?
Right.
Like, so if you're going to walk around and you're going to say that the demiurge is evil and malevolent, right?
Right.
Yeah. You know, like what are you producing?
Exactly. So like, I mean, it's something like a very simple analogy would be like, you have a house and it's maybe not the nicest house on the inside, right? But like you decorate it, and you could decorate it as if you live in a shitty house and make it look shitty. Or you could take your time and cultivate and make it look nice inside, because that's your choice to do one of the two, right? Like you're mm-hmm. not stuck just because it's in a bad neighborhood doesn't mean the inside of it can't be awesome, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so just because there's shit going on around us in the world doesn't mm-hmm. mean that we have to engage in it.
Well, I also think that's kind of a cop out too, because it's like, there's never a moment in space and time that you can't like look at something and be like the world's falling apart. You know, everything's in a perpetual state of decay.
Of course. Everything is. We know this. It is the bane of our existence, though, this idea.
Yeah.
People don't like this because they don't understand that we don't die.
You can try to escape it as much as you want, but it's like that is what, I mean, the entire idea, the divorce between the original concept of the demiurge was a bunch of philosophers like trying to figure out like, well, why does everything decay? Because everybody was upset that civilizations were failing and people got murdered and bad things happened, you know?
Yeah, it's
like,
I just got something right now actually about it. Because that's the whole, like the whole faith, shit, I hate that. The whole faith thing is that we know somewhere subconscious level that this isn't it. We do know that. And we do, there's evidence to this. Everybody look, what the hell's religion? It's that, it's to that reinforcement that we live on, right? Like that it's not the end here, whatever.
Oh.
That's on purpose to keep us grounded in that reality. As much as I hate organized religion, I think that's the main purpose, is to remind people in a fucked up way, albeit, that we do go on, right? But that's the thing, is like, we weren't supposed to come here and be terrified of this shit. We were supposed to be like this. We were supposed to remember that it doesn't end. You know what I mean? And to just make the best of what you have right now, because it's not over. But like, why waste your time? You know, why mm-hmm. make this a waste? And if you're sitting there in negative, woe is me shit all the time, you're wasting it. You mm-hmm. gotta like see, there is always something beautiful. You're right. Like there is, it's, I don't understand, you know, I go to the beach or whatever, or like to the mountains, and I look around at like the scenery and I'm like in awe of it. Yeah. Right. And I look at everybody else around me and they're just like not even registering it. I feel like, and it's just, that's weird to me.
Well, I live on the beach in LA, and that is not a clean.
No, it is not.
Beach. But you better. It's
beautiful, though.
But I mean, I look at that beach every day and it's like, yeah, there's trash all over the place mm-hmm. and there might be needles over there. Yeah, but,
there are definitely needles over there.
God damn, that's
definitely needles.
that sunrise is gorgeous. Yeah. You know?
Despite all of our shit that we've done with it, it's still beautiful.
Despite that, it's in a state of decay.
Yes.
Right? And the state of, but like,
if everything was forever, we wouldn't appreciate the shit, any of it. Yeah. If we would take everything for granted.
Yeah.
So like, and that's, we still do. Like we take things for granted. We take people, we take jobs, we take circumstances for granted all the time without, and we think that they're forever and they're not. Like nothing is. The only constant is change. Yeah. That's the only thing that's ever the same, is it's always going to change. Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, if everything was eternal like that and we didn't see it actively dying in front of us, we mm-hmm. would have less of an appreciation for it than we already do.
So then, and there wouldn't be being. There would be no being if there was not that separation, that delineation, that decay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because if everything was just an internal, amorphous one with no limit.
Yeah. Then what?
No boundary. There would be no experience.
None. Yeah. That's it. I mean, we're supposed to be experiencing it through other, right? It's the universe experience itself through us. Yes. Right. So each, and I, that's the other thing I saw.
Or God experiencing that everything himself.
That, yeah. Like, yes, because that's us though. Yeah. We're just, again, these fragments that's what I saw. Like I saw that too. It was all like a giant mirror that was fractured into like 8 billion pieces. And like each one of us has one of those little slivers in it.
That's, so that's what the Kabbalists believe. That's what they believe.
I know. I know. When I was in that class, I wrote a paper about it. Cause I was like, they knew my story. You know, my professors all did because I had to like, I used it to get into the program. They were like, my one professor, Chuck, he was like, I know you want to take this class. I know it's going to resonate with you. And then as he was teaching it, you know, like he was like, Anna, do you know, I know you can resonate with this because it was literally describing, like it said in one of the books we're reading, God is a Verb. It said how the Adam was able to stand on the earth and like straddle it, you know, like with on each side, like he could wrap his arms around the world. And I've said that like before. I've said I was so huge. Out of body, like my form could be so huge that I could have wrapped my arms around the entire planet and like hugged it, not a problem. Like, and then I read that exact thing in the Kabbalah text and I was like, what the fuck? Like, oh my God, it was crazy.
That's the experience. My experience with Jewish Kabbalah is that like you'll be reading it and then you just like randomly hit something and it's like, how the hell do they know that?
Right. I was like, oh my God, like all of this, I experienced the fragmentation. Like I saw all that, like crazy. Like they've got that right. Like for sure. From my experience, I can say that is accurate. Like for at least in my 6 minutes experience. But yeah, like that's, so I think at the end of the day, we're supposed to be embracing ideally. We're supposed to be embracing the things that we don't like, and finding out maybe why we don't like them so that we can reconcile those things so that we can reach a point of equilibrium and be present and be connected.
Understand the process of demiurgy. Understand the process of creation. You are demiurgos. You are demiurgos.
Yeah,
right?
We're like giving you literally the answer right now and no one will listen to it. Everyone's going to be like, that's nonsense.
So,
you know?
So it's like, you delineate, like you create, right? And you don't, it's not just your art that you create. It's not just your trade that you create. It's your perspectives. It's your ideologies. It's the world that you live in, right? And so if you are looking at a part of the creation that is imperfect, you have the power to work on that, right? You are the craftsman.
Yes. So, and I have like a tip, okay? I'm going to give a tip out like for once. So if you are somebody that wants to change up the way you're viewing things, right? And you don't know how to go about doing it. There's a real simple thing you could do is you get in the fucking shower. Okay. Get in the shower. And as you're showering, like just visualize all of the shit that you want to not be like thinking about anymore, or like focused on, or all of those things that are whatever's negative dripping off of you and going down the drain. Right. And like, see it as a symbolic kind of cleansing, right? You know, and then when you get out of the shower, like remind yourself that this is a new paradigm shift today. It starts here and then go forward. That's it. That's what we do, right? Like we can start that way. It's easy if you need a starting point. You know what I mean? Just like one little thing at a time. Start small because it's harder than it sounds.
All right. Well,
that light just went out.
Yeah. I've had 3 lights go out in the past 10 minutes.
Are you serious?
So I think that's kind of telling us that we need to stop. Time to go. We have pressing issues to work on, Dr. Stone. We have experiments to run.
Yes, we do have some experiments to run tonight. Yes. Yeah. Excited.
Exactly. I'm excited too. I'm so excited.
Yeah, anyways, feel like it's going to work because I've been all day getting stuff.
Yeah?
Yeah. You know, I've been weird all day.
Yeah, you have been weird all day. Very strange.
What's been happening.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So all right. Yeah, no, this is going to be good. Anyways, thank you guys for joining us again on an episode of On the Demiurge. I'm hoping that you guys got some insight. I cannot stress this enough. You are the Demiurge.
Yep.
You are the Demiurge.
It and you're not going to hear it.
You can watch a million of those YouTube videos about the Demiurge, and they're going to tell you all about you know, how he became the demiurge or what Gnostic gospel or why you should be upset about it. And it's like, we're sitting here, we're telling you, this is the gnosis on it. It's you. You're the demiurge.
Yep.
All right. So man is the demiurge. All right.
Yes.
So,
yeah. Okay.
All right. Thank you guys. Good night.
You've been listening to Discourse, where we venture into the mysteries of esotericism, the occult, and the depths of spiritual exploration. I am Abimon the Great, joined as always by Dr. Anna Stone, bringing the insights of both practitioner and scholar to guide your journey. Remember, the path of wisdom is illuminated by both knowledge and experience, and each step brings new discoveries. Until next time, continue your exploration and stay attuned to the unseen.